The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It is just about to turn 5 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 9th of February. You're very welcome along to The Greg Hughes Show. It's great to have you with us for another show, another week, hopefully. We've got 2 hours of packed content for you, as you hopefully have come to know and expect. And we want you involved in the conversation throughout the morning, 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000. Or give us a call on 074 91 25000. And if you prefer, you can email comments@highlandradio.com. So is there anything happened over the weekend that you think we should be talking about? Or maybe you've got some good news or an act of kindness that you wish to pass on. We love all of that type of stuff here on the programme, of course. Right, let's get to the front pages, see what's happening. We'll start with the Derry People, Donegal News. Right, the Church of Ireland Diocese of Derry and Raphoe held its inaugural service for Racial Justice Sunday in Letterkenny. The service, which was held in Conwall Parish Church, focused on celebrating diversity under the theme Welcoming the Stranger. Reverend Adrian Dorian, who became rector of Conwall and Garton last March, said the decision to hold the first service in Letterkenny reflected the town's racial diversity. Moving to the area from Downpatrick, Camperdown almost 1 year ago, he said, it's incredibly enriching to see. And he said Letterkenny now is a real kaleidoscope. On to the Derry News. A lack of funding forces closure of a youth group. The story reads that a Derry community youth group, I presume it should say, has announced its closure on Street Community Youth, confirmed it will close at the end of March due to the loss of Education Authority local area funding. On Street Community Youth has been at the heart of the local community in Gallia for 30 years, delivering a range of youth services, including its streets team, who are on hand in the evenings and on weekends to support young people. Maybe you're involved in that group or have a view on it losing its funding. And of course, now closing, please feel free to get in touch with us from the north, 00353 7491 25000. Keir Starmer, the leader of the UK government's under immense pressure at the moment. His survival as UK Prime Minister is hanging by a thread after the resignation of Morgan McSweeney, his Cork-born Chief of Staff. The Prime Minister's right-hand man quit yesterday afternoon after a growing backlash over his role in the appointment of Pete Mandelson as the UK's ambassador to the US. This is all based on the fact that they were told that it probably wasn't the right move, but still went ahead with it. What I would imagine is that this is a sacrifice. The McSweeney has sacrificed his role with a view that it might save Keir Starmer. It is a gamble. It may not, but presumably that's what they're trying to do. Will this be enough to keep people quiet effectively? Well, Mr. McSweeney insisted Mr. Mandelson was the best man for the job in Washington, despite being warned twice by civil servants about the peers' ties to Jeffrey Epstein. So he was told and he still went ahead with it, resigning hours after a cabinet minister had backed him to stay on. McSweeney said, in the circumstances, the only honourable course is to step aside. The departure is a major blow for Mr. Starmer, depriving him of his closest political aide and the person most responsible for guiding Labour to a landslide in 2024. It leaves the Prime Minister exposed with enemies demanding that he quit too. So we'll see. Is it enough to keep people quiet? I don't know. So what happens after you lose your job in government, be it elected, appointed or a civil servant or whatever it might be? Well, it costs us a lot of money. The Oireachtas has paid more than £14.5 million in severance, redundancies and pension lump sums to ex-TDs and senators and their staff since the 2024 election. So this is just really, it says 2025 elections in the headlines and 2024 elections in the text of the story. But anyway, one of them's right. But €14.5 million of taxpayers' money has gone to ex-TDs, ex-senators and their staff. It said £2.98 million shared among 70 people was paid in monthly termination payments to politicians who retired or lost their seats an average of 41,800. The monthly payments are made to TDs and senators who have at least 3 years of continuous service and are designed to ease them back into civilian life. Separately, 1.14 million was paid out in termination lump sums under the scheme for those departing the Oireachtas. The sum was shared between 70 ex-TDs and senators, an average payment of 16,000 euro. This is not goodbye money, is it? An information note said lump sum payments were made where a person had at least 6 months of continuous service in the Dáil or Seanad. And on it goes. 14.5 million euro in total. On to the Irish Daily Mail now. And this is one of those stories that I'm not sure about. We'll get your reaction. That's why I'm reading it. And it's not just in this paper. It's been in other papers as well. The state has spent over 70,000 euro on weight loss drugs for prisoners since 2022, while ordinary patients are denied access under the drugs payment scheme, Independent Ireland TD Ken O'Flynn has said. Now, Mr. O'Flynn was referring to figures he secured under Freedom of Information, which shows more than 57,000 euro has been spent on Ozempic for prisoners since 2022, with total spending on weight loss drugs in prisons exceeding 70,000 over the same period. Now, I'm not here to defend prisoners or say that they have nothing but a cushy life or whatever. I don't really have enough insight into it, but I do know that Ozempic is for the treatment of diabetes. And these are human beings, okay? We are supposed to be rehabilitating themselves. And it's been framed as if this is a lifestyle, that they're taking it to lose weight, when I'd imagine, and I don't have the information Ken O'Flynn has, I imagine actually these are people with diabetes who are receiving medical treatment. You wouldn't deny them other medical treatment. I can't imagine it's about vanity, but I could be wrong. But anyway, the TD went on to say that at the same time the Minister for Health confirmed access to these medicines for the general public remains tightly restricted, with no timeline for reimbursement decisions and no published cost-benefit analysis, this represents a clear inconsistency in public policy. Prisoners are provided with structured meals, supervised healthcare and gyms. But still, you know, that's perhaps is a misunderstanding of diabetes, or maybe he's right. I don't know. I just think there might be more to the story than meets the eye. The Irish Daily Star this morning: the government has no idea if 2,589 illegal immigrants who were ordered to leave Ireland have left the country or not. Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan issued a record 4,700 departure orders to illegal immigrants and criminals last year, but he can only confirm less than half, 2,111, have actually left the state. The vast majority were international protection applicants, and 1,616 left voluntary, while 185 were enforced deportations, with Gardaí accompanying individuals back to their native countries on commercial flights, and 182 were removed on charter flights. Now, the Department of Justice has received confirmation 61 had left separately. However, they cannot confirm if the 2,589 unaccounted for have left or not. Now, this is not really a commentary on immigration, but the fact that you have 2,589 people, regardless of where they're from or not, that are a mixture of criminals or shouldn't be here, according to the department's own data, and you don't know where they are, okay, potentially not very good people, that's quite concerning, isn't it? That's a system that needs to be resolved. And that's a commentary on anything. If you had 2,589 regular folk that had been found to be guilty of something or other, you'd want to know where they were, wouldn't you? You'd want to be able to monitor and so on and so forth. And finally, in the Sun today, a government task force to address rip-off energy prices has been slammed after it emerged it met just three times in the last 9 months. The National Energy Affordability Task Force, set up last June to tackle skyrocketing electricity prices, has been branded a talking shop. And I posted about this on my own social media there not so long ago. One of the driving forces of the cost of our electricity, the cost of our fuel, and so on and so forth, is due to the targets that have been set for us to reduce our emissions. And I posted because I didn't think we'd talked about it enough or people were aware, but that these targets that we have set or have been set for us are really down to what you could describe as our paper wealth, because the EU sets emission targets based on a country's wealth. That's its GDP, as you would have heard. So we have massive corporation taxes paid to us here by multinationals. So Ireland is officially ranked as one of the richest countries in Europe. So that means that we are forced to pay, we are forced with a 42% reduction by 2030. Now, we increased this, the Irish government increased this to 51% themselves, but it's based literally on a country's income, and it's based off those taxes that we get from multinationals. You know those taxes that you don't really feel or there's no benefit to the country? Well, it's those taxes that are actually determining our 42% reduction in 2030, which is probably exacerbating the charges on petrol, diesel, home heating oil, etc. Similar sized countries, just in terms of population, Slovakia, their target's 23%. Croatia, their target is 17%. But because we have all of this wealth, ours is 42%. So, as I say, I'm not anti-climate change. I'm just saying that we're constantly being told not to rely on these taxes, okay, that they could go any minute. Yet we have long-term emission targets which are set on those very same those taxes. So we are deemed to be a rich country, but that's not the reality for people listening to this program anyway. I mean, hopefully some of you are doing well and are somewhat well off, but I mean in terms of actually the day-to-day life. You know how we feel sometimes that we're being told that the country's so rich, we're being told that we have all of these resources, but you don't feel that because the health service seems to be on the blink. You can't get a GP's appointment. It costs a fortune to run your car. Electricity prices through the roof. Well, some of that, in terms of the electricity prices, petrol, diesel, there's a lot of taxes on that to try and meet these emission targets. But as I say, those emission targets are based on paper, on this corporation tax that we're just siloing away, right? So that doesn't make an awful lot of sense. And then you've got other countries similar in size to us, but without the multinationals, and their targets are 23%, 17%, which are far more achievable. And also perhaps can be done with less sort of impact on the general public. I don't know if you've got a view on any of that. As I say, I'm only sort of stating the facts. I'm not anti this or that, but it's good information to know, I think. Right, now, during our legal questions with Seamus Dunn on Friday, someone messaged in and said they were sick of going to their locals or going to public events and constantly being filmed for Facebook. They said, I would have been the first on the dance floor, but had a video of me shared online and I vowed never again. Videoing should be banned in places meant to let your hair down. Now, firstly, people seem to think that this was me said it. It's not me. I have no issue, really, to be honest with you. I have nothing, I'm not that bothered by it at all. But the post exploded on social media with lots of people saying, yes, I agree. Another said, it's becoming troublesome. However, I can't imagine it changing now. Thankfully, the phones weren't a thing when I would have cared. Another, I think this is the only thing there's out there to stop your images appearing online. It's up to the establishment to set the rules about filming. Posting images or videos of strangers online without consent can violate privacy rights. If the video causes distress or is used for harassment, you could be in violation of the Harassment, Harmful Communications and Related Offences Act 2020. Now, Seamus Gunn's legal advice was that whomever's shooting this video, if it's a venue or whatever it might be, that there are potentially GDPR implications, because by videoing it and storing it, they're holding your private information. Just film the artists, not the people, says another. With the artist's permission, then you, the people, see the artists online. Free people there get to pay in. Okay. Thank God when we were growing up, we had clubs that played good music. We had a place to go for a late night drink and dance. It was safe as houses to be out on your own as a woman. No phones, no one videoing you. People spoke to each other. We had fun. If someone arrived with a camera, it was borrowed from their parents and normally for someone's birthday. Why does everything have to be put online, says that listener. Another, lots of music venues in Berlin have no phone policies. Nobody minded. They go in with your coat on your way in, very liberating. So as I say, the overwhelming majority of those that wanted to reply were saying that they really don't like this crack of being filmed dancing or in a pub or in that kind of environment. And a couple of those people are coming on to talk about that a little later on. Again, just to clarify, it was not me who was complaining. I just want to be very clear in relation to that. Right, 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. If you want to get involved in that conversation, or indeed give us a call on 07491 25,000. And just to remind you, of course, that you can watch this show every single day, and lots of program actually here on programming here on Highland Radio. The lads from from Monday Night Sessions, they stream the show, so it's a lovely way for you to spend your Monday night. If you want to watch it on your big TV, it's on the YouTube app, you see, Highland Radio Ireland. But this show, Ivan does an update too on his show. He's updating people on some latest touring news or the latest single being released or what have you. Jean Curran streams her interviews. Tommy Rosner, he's never off the blowing thing as well, which is fantastic. So there's lots of opportunity for you to watch some of your favourite presenters here on Highland Radio as well. Well, towards the end of last week, we were live to the Bord Beer headquarters in Dublin, where a sit-in protest was ongoing, a protest being led by members of the Irish Farmers Association. It's calling for the resignation of the Bord Beer chair, Larry Murren. Adrian Gallagher, I hope, is with me now. Adrian, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Right. I presume for those of you still on site there, it's been a very long weekend. What have the developments been?
Well, yeah, it has been a long week, actually. Yeah. I suppose in terms of what has happened since Friday, we had up to Friday, we had staff on site here. And on Friday afternoon, we were informed that there would be no further staff on site. Hence, there would be no further food deliveries from outside and into the building, which included, at the time, boiling water and any hot foods. So that was Friday, I suppose, actually. And through to the word, there was no staff on and there were no food delivered in on Saturday morning, be it via breakfast, which was purchased and left outside the door, and security were informed to bring it in, but they were under strict orders not to allow any food into the building. So that was on Saturday morning. Obviously, as you've probably seen on social media, there were various ways of communicating with the outside world, which we've exercised, and the subsequent turned out that later that evening that there was a phone call or contact made to Michael Martin and the Tánaiste, and I believe that there was an order given by Michael Martin to ensure that the six members who are in the living area are in the thing to be fed, you know. So there was a delivery of food arranged then that night, that half 10 or
yeah. But just to put it into context, you know, it took a phone call and the intervention of the Taoiseach to get food to you.
That's the information that we were given, actually. At the end, actually, that's what has happened, actually.
Remind listeners how this has unfolded, just for those who may have missed. It started with a protest outside Bord Beer, and this was following revelations connected to the Bord Beer chair, Larry Murren. So just, Adrian, if you don't mind, so that everyone's caught up, run us through.
Yeah. First, come back to the reasons why we're here. Right? The reasons why we are here is, look, we have a Bord Beer department, a government state body in Ireland here, who promote Irish-produced foods right across the world, okay? We also then have another version of it, which is for the Origin Green Standards, okay, which is an image as well that Bord Beer, we'll say, kind of promote right across the world as well, where food is produced sustainably, etc., okay, and it gets the Origin Green stamp. And then, I suppose, if you know Bord Beer, we have a board of directors, and Larry sits as the main man on who chairs that this board of directors on Bord Beer here, you know. So I suppose it only materialized in the last 2 weeks that Larry himself, who runs Don Farm Meats here in Naas in Dublin, subsequently turns out that he was actually importing Brazilian beef and adding them to the products which he was selling throughout Ireland and Europe and right across the world, you know. So that was a national outcome. That I mean, and we as AFA members and Bar B, I'm a Bar B approved farmer myself, which I have to do an awful lot of work around recording and traceability of my own livestock from the time they're born till the time they're slaughtered, to ensure that we have there's a full traceability system there from farm to fork from our perspective. But yet here we have somebody sitting on the board who is in a position that he can import beef and sell it from right across the Europe, but with the logo or the badge here of Barbie or Origin Green, you know. So it just doesn't add up and doesn't sit. And there's an awful lot of anger here right across Ireland here from farmers. Farmers alone, but I think the general public got on board then, and they realised the consequences of this beef. As you probably noted a few months ago today, if they did do a trip to Brazil to see the standard of beef production over there, and you can, as the findings come back, there was zero traceability.
But it also, of course, you know, it dilutes the argument for Irish beef being a prime. Being a prime sort of produce, if you know what I mean, especially as that's probably going to be one of our even more so important selling measures as we compete with Brazilian beef, possibly in the next number of years. But when you've got the person headed up with sort of getting that message across that we've got this great produce, which we do, but we're also cutting it effectively with Brazilian beef, that waters down the message.
Well, it certainly does, actually. It certainly does and gives out the wrong image, you know. I would say that all the beef and pork and chicken that Larry uses and his company is all processed. So it'll all go into a processed farm, be it sandwiches or cooked meals or pizzas, etc., you know. So he's not in the position of importing, we'll say, carcasses
perception is 9/10 of the reality, and that your average consumer is not going to differentiate like that. Obviously, no, you will, Adrian. Is Christine with you? I wonder.
She's not. No, actually,
that's okay.
Yeah, yeah,
no,
she's
problem.
She's
Christine Friel is the Donegal representative of the IFA Farm Committee and has been part of that protest as well.
Yeah,
so what what happens next, Adrian? What do you do next?
Well, I mean, there's been several requests for dialogue. I mean, and it's going to take dialogue to resolve this, you know. I suppose we tend to remain in the building here until Larry has moved off as chair, you know. So that's the AFA stance, and that's what we intend to do.
Is there anything that could end this protest that isn't that short of that? Because, you know, I presume he's got his rights, okay. There would have to be a determination that what he's doing could justify his dismissal, you know what I mean? And the mood music at the moment is that he has the backing. So, I mean, you don't want to paint yourself into a corner either here, Adrian, do you know what I mean, when he's got his rights and his position has some level of protection there as well. So is there anything else other than him stepping away or being made to step down that will end this protest?
Well, I mean, initially we need to get into dialogue here, you know, and see what options or what can be drawn out. I'm aware of lots of information going on in the background. I probably can see this being resolved fairly shortly this week, you know.
You can or can't? You can.
I can, yeah. I can, actually, I mean, Bar B have actually vacated the building. So all their staff are working from home at the moment. So it's not a good image, and it's certainly not going to do any benefit to Barbia. I mean, we need to get them back on the back working again at their desk, so they can promote Irish food and work with them. You know, so look, it's of the interest of Barbia that they get behind us as well. Actually, and I mean, it's the image of Barbia that we farmers are protecting here. You know, and look, it's. I believe it's going to move on fairly quickly now to start of this week, you know. That's my own personal opinion on it, you know.
And is that along the lines of
position
has become untenable because of this protest and the disruption of it?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly, yeah. I mean, he's it's of his own benefit as well that that he steps aside, you know. Mm. And there's various options that can be done. Okay, we went, the minister did appoint him. The minister has the powers to remove him. There's other options. Maybe the board, the full board, could have an emergency meeting and have a vote of no confidence in the chair, you know. So there's various options here that need to be exercised, you know, to keep proceedings moving forward here.
All right, thanks for your time. Look after yourself. Adrian Gallagher, who's the IFA, the IFA National Sheep Chair, and there are others. We have a strong Donegal representation in there as well. What are your views on that? 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 07491 25000, isn't it? Yeah, 07. I'm typing a number at the same time as reading a number out of my head. And don't forget, of course, to type in a number on the screen. Don't forget, of course, too, you can email us, comments@highlandradio.com. We love to get your emails as well. Just to remind you, by the way, that the sister podcast to this show, the Greg Hughes podcast, it is available. We have a number of episodes up there for you on our website right about now. And also we have new episodes being released every Friday. We had a very interesting conversation last Friday on the difficult issue of domestic abuse. But I know our guest, Biddy O'Loughlin, was very keen to get a message out there. And I suppose anyone affected by that or has been or questions whether they are, certainly well worth listening to that. And we've another very interesting conversation coming up for you on Friday as well. But we'll stick with the live show because I think we can say good morning now to Tony Murray, founder of Before We Die. Good morning to you, Tony.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. And thank you so much for your time. It's very much appreciated. Right. So talk to me about the organisation Before We Die.
Well, it came about, I have a daughter who has an intellectual disability, and she is 42. And when you get a daughter 42, you realise you're getting older, and it's a constant thing in the back of your mind, what will happen when we're no longer able to care for her? And so I've been thinking about trying to lobby, do various things over the years. But then last June or July, there was a newspaper article in the Irish Times about the tens of millions that were lost by the HSE. And I was absolutely outraged by that figure. When people and families listening to you will know, you can't get transport for your adult to go to the day service. You can't get basic services. Respite is a dream. And here's the HSE wasting tens of millions in uncollected fees, paying suppliers twice, not invoicing them at all, which motivated me to write a letter to the Irish Times. I got on radio and I started the organisation Before We Die, because essentially that's on every parent's mind. What will happen when they're no longer able to care? And unfortunately, nobody can answer that question.
Yes, and as you can imagine, Tony, that's a conversation we've had many, many times on this programme. Yeah, and, sure. You know, it's not just people maybe in their 60s that might be concerned with that. I've spoken to people in their 30s or the 40s that if they become ill or because they don't see an alternative, they have to plan for what happens when they're like the age side of it is not really the issue. It's about your ability to care, isn't it? You know, and that can be taken from you at 40 or 50 or 60 or 70. I don't want to be sounding like I'm saying you reach a certain age and you can no longer do this, because I also know people well into their 80s that are the principal carer of a partner, for an example.
Yeah, well, it should be, obviously circumstances. You can't say, oh, young people can cope and old people can't. But I think you would agree that when you reach the age of 70, you know, your energy, your battery is running low. You're more life behind you than in front of you. And it's inevitable that in the next, you know, 5-10 years, I won't be here. And if I am, I still could be caring with no hope of residential. Essentially, the HSE are waiting for myself or Susan, my wife Susan, to die. And then Aoife will be whipped away from home. She will be put into an emergency place, which will be far from where we live in Dublin. She could end her day service, her friends, her routine, and could end up anywhere. I know one boy who is from the Sutton Hoth area in Dublin. He's ended up in Rosslare as an emergency. So lost everything.
And there is, I mean, there's, this isn't, we're not talking, I don't think, about short-term fixes either. We need a plan, don't we? We need a short, medium and long-term plan. That involves the type of accommodation that we're talking about, where that accommodation might be, at what point might you transition into that. You know, there's an awful lot here that needs to be planned. We're not going to fix it today, but I think the HSE, the government, need to sort of say, right, we recognise this, and maybe even tie it in with the conversation about the generally ageing population and the different type of accommodation that we might need as well, Tony. You know, I don't think these two issues are a million miles apart.
No. We say that the government haven't even got a plan to have a plan. It's that bad. So essentially what's happened is that the service providers have given up because they can't buy, they can't build. So they've given up developing residential. And now it's being farmed out to for-profit companies, which is incredibly dangerous. It's hard to explain the danger of that.
Can you talk to me a little bit more about that so people understand?
These are companies who have set up to come into the country in some cases, but they've set up to for profit. And basically, when there's an emergency, it goes out to tender to a number of companies and they tender to provide care. Their staff are very transient. They're not paid and their working conditions are not as good as those of what are called Section 39. They're the big service providers around the country, the traditional ones that people would know, the John of God's in Dublin, St. Michael's House, the big care. So the staff are very transient. They get very limited ongoing training and it's for profit. Now, here's companies making profit out of people with an intellectual disability. I mean, I don't think you could make that up. It's the state's responsibility. And I have to say that the level of care in the service providers, the Section 39s, is really, really good. But because the staff are committed, they're trained, but more importantly, they usually know the actual client, the man or woman going in. They would have experience of them from their service. They know what they like. They know their quirks. All of that thing, they've got a relationship with them and with the family. But a for-profit company comes out of the blue and basically makes an awful lot of money. We have been saying, we've said to the Taoiseach and to the Minister of Health, Norma Foley, that by allowing a crisis to develop, it's incredibly expensive. Where if it's a planned service and the adult is weaned into it, effectively there is... they get a little bit, it builds up over maybe a few weeks or months. So they go from a home to home. So if you think about my daughter, she's 42. She's really like a 3 to 4 year old. If or when something happens, Susan and I, she will lose her home, her family, her friends in her service. And she could also lose her service because she could be so far away. I mean, that is absolutely horrendous. It's callous.
Can you sort of compartmentalise that? Or is this sort of ever present on your and your wife's minds, if you know what I mean? Like, in other words, does it feel like a constant major black cloud over the two of you all of the time? And it's caring, it's concern for the care of your child when you can no longer do it. So, in other words, that time that you have now, I wonder, is it dominated by these thoughts?
I'll use the analogy, not a dark cloud. I would call it a black hole.
Right.
There's nothing. It's hard to, like, people kind of, friends, you know, when I retired, oh, you're going on a trip, you're going to go on a big, you know. No, because somebody has to look after Aoife. like people still, is Aoife still living at home with you? Yeah, there's no hope of a residential place. The way the process is at the moment, and it's so callous and so uncaring, that we have to apply, in our case, to Dublin City Council, obviously Donegal will be you, apply to your local council for social housing. Now, we all know there's a real crisis about housing regardless. Mm. But when you look at the 24-page application form, which has to be filled out, it has nothing to do with disability. So it's basically people looking for social housing. Then you go to your local council and they go, we don't know, we don't have a section that deals with disability. But what needs to happen is that there needs to be a freeing up and build purpose units. Unfortunately, what the government did, now it's fortunate and unfortunate. So the fortunate part is that they started to decentralise and to take people out of congregated settings. So they were the big traditional homes, high walls, gates, and nobody got out and nobody got in. That kind of really institutional care. So they said they were against congregated settings, but they didn't define what a congregated setting was. So now that the service providers are looking over their shoulders and saying, if we put four people in a house, that can be deemed as a congregated setting, and the HSEs will say we are not going to fund it.
Yeah.
So what often happens now is that they, and it's certainly in crisis, they put one person in a house on their own with two or four staff. Now, that's a really inefficient way to use staff. Mm. And who wants to live on their own? So like in our case with Aoife and all our friends and people she knows, they all live with their parents. There's family interactions, or, you know, all of the usual. And of course, they love their brothers and sisters and their and their nieces, nephews, all that kind of thing. So why would you put Aoife in a house on her own? She will spend all day. We know what she would do. She'll spend all day looking at an iPad. And of course, if staff aren't trained, if they haven't got transport, the facility, they'll leave her sit on the iPod all day because happy day, she's content.
Okay.
But of course, she's not been stimulated. She's not been socialized.
No.
We have to continually bring Aoife out because she will take the easy option. That's her disability.
And that's just an existence. It's not a life of any description
no.
at all.
No.
Okay, Tony, listen, thank you very much for that. Where are you located before we die? Is it social media primarily, websites? I don't know.
Yeah, there's a website, one word, beforewedie.ie, and you can sign up. But just to explain to people very carefully, not to raise expectations, we are a lobby group. We can't take on individual cases.
Oh, no, I understand that. Yeah, no, and that's quite clear. No, as I say, it was clear from the beginning, but it's very,
yes,
very relatable. And, you know, the more people work together, I'm a massive fan of what can happen from the ground up. Often
absolutely,
it's not politicians, it's people. And if enough people get together with a shared goal, there comes a point where you can no longer be ignored. Thanks very much for your time, Tony, and best
You're
wishes to... Aoife as well, and your wife. Look after yourself, okay? 086 60 25,000, is that something you can relate to? I'm sure many of you out there can. Derek Viles, a businessman and former local election candidate. Good morning to you, Derek. Thanks for your time today. Right, okay, you've been highlighting concerns over business closures in the south of the county. Obviously, Killybegs, Dunkaneely, etc. What's going on in your view?
I wrote an open letter and Killybegs Online and a few other places reposted it. I think it's a death by a thousand cuts for small businesses going on silently. So these are the canaries in the coal mine, I think myself. I think it's pointing to a bigger strain on businesses in our area of South and Southwest Donegal.
What do you think? I suppose, too, there's a few things going on, sorry. Killybegs already under pressure because, you know, what has made Killybegs what it is was the fishing industry and those problems, you know, we discuss quite regularly on the programme. But then on top of that, the regular sort of cost of cost of doing business, that's also a factor at play too. So there's almost a double, triple whammy.
Yeah, like my open letter said, there's no one identifiable problem. There's many. The costs of business are rising and prohibitive. You were just speaking earlier, I thought it was perfect, about the cost of living for people, where over 500,000 people are behind on their basic electricity, gas, and there's no numbers for who can't afford for their home heating oil, which many people in Donegal would be doing, not relying on gas, so the figures aren't there. But it's shocking. It's shocking, it is, and it means there's less money in their pockets for small services. I had a taxi business which is just put on hold at the moment because the local economy is so bad. I have a tourism business which I'm trying to keep going for the summer, and I'll make those decisions shortly. But there's no, even for myself, Greg, I can't put a finger on one thing. But yes, you're right, with the fishing industry is under severe pressure. Saying that, we're not seeing the devastation that will come from that, because we're busy now landing mackerel. The boats are mostly not here in the bay. A few of them are in the harbour. A few of them are at the fishing grounds. Factories are business. It's busy. It's when all that stops come April time and the boats tie up. And what I would be suggesting is to the politicians that are tuning in and listening, is now is the time. View Burns Meats. View Eurogiant in Donegal Town closing or going into administration or being under pressure, or you know, to a lesser extent, smaller micro businesses like myself, view them as a worrying trend. Now, on the larger engineering ones, they've been quietly letting go staff. Chatting to them lately, on Friday, announced 12 more jobs gone in a net factory. 3 day a week in an engineering company. This is all in the last few days. Even since I wrote that letter, things have changed. So I think now is the time for people to put in a task force, those in power. Put in training. I am retraining in different sectors at the moment, or for the future of Killybegs, in port management and other stuff that I already do for cruise ships through my tour business. But I noticed when I rang about training funds, there's no new training funds, Greg. This is very, very basic stuff. There is only the normal training funds. So there was a lot of noise about Killybegs and the cuts to the fishing, and it's between 100 and, depends on who you look at, but it's between 100 and 200 million of cuts that we're now going to experience over the next year. To give you an idea of that, it's probably a third of business is going to be devastated. But the other businesses are trying to get ready. The bigger businesses are trying to get ready by shedding off. If they don't get new contracts, they're not getting new contracts because the costs in general in the Irish economy are too high. You know, they are caught in a bind. But most importantly, with my open letter, I was saying as well, is they need those government supports. However they're done, the politicians are there to do that, and government in particular, need to find out how do we keep these businesses going as an engineering centre, for example, in Killybegs, for the next wave, the blue economy, the offshore industry, that hopefully will even if it's on the East Coast, the services can be provided from places like Killybegs, you know. So it's the attitude at the minute that I can see, and it's only my opinion, is that the politicians are basically hoping it all turns out well, but they look like they have their head in the sand from, you know, small people, small business people on the ground like myself. So a task force at the very basic, a training fund, give people, you know, a future. What's happening here is more and more people were going to the offshore industries all around Europe, around the world, but in Europe and particularly in America as well. More and more, they're not returning to the fishing industry because it was a short enough season. You take away, you know, a third of its value, you're going to have a shorter season.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Okay, it feels like recession. Yeah, and it kind of feels like recession talk. But anyway, we're being told we're a very wealthy country, but many not feeling that, sadly. Derek, thank you very much for your time. Derek Vile there, businessman, former local election candidate. Do you have any views in relation to that? I'm sure you do. 086 60 25,000. Killybeg also, too, I presume, is facing increased competition from the likes of Donegal Town. Donegal Town feels like it's on a real high at the moment. I'm not sure if that's the case, but maybe you have an insight and let us know.
Where your opinion matters. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Yes, indeed. You're very welcome back to the programme. I was just before 10 as we were trying to connect to Derek, going to read some of the comments coming in since last Friday and over the course of the weekend. As it relates to those flights between Dublin and Donegal, you might be well aware at this stage that there are plans just to have a morning flight and an evening flight, which would not be very useful in terms of, many people feel, inbound tourism, but also to really quite importantly, that connection with Dublin hospitals for patients. This caller says, I was reading the paper today, flights between Ireland and England, people will need a passport to fly. At the bottom it says that flights from Donegal and Dublin and Belfast to the UK will not be affected. Do they think that Donegal is in the UK? I'm not sure about that. To the Greg Hughes Show, why do cancer patients have to travel in the first place? Why are the politicians not fighting the state for state-of-the-art hospitals in the northwest? It's crazy they have to go to Dublin in the first place. I agree, though, that for all people going out in the morning and back in the evening should be a priority. Eileen and Guido. Eileen, I get where you're coming from, and we're always campaigning here, of course, for better health services, but there are certain disciplines in medicine that do require to be in the capital next to other services for access for the majority of the population. You know, there are some parts of cancer treatment, of course, as we know, that are available at Letterkenny University Hospital out in the Gelf in Galway, but there are some parts of that system that are available in Dublin, and I don't think we can kind of ever really anticipate that they might be located up here. A caller lives in Burtonport. Over Christmas, we had a young family stay with us with two kids. It was cheaper for them to hire a car in Letterkenny and leave it at Dublin Airport than it was to get the flights from Dublin to Donegal. Okay. Rightio. Let me see. We are going now to Paddy from Sleeve League Boat Trips. And this is off the back of a call we had in on Friday about someone who did not like being videoed in pubs at dances. They thought that this was a breach of their privacy, that they didn't have a say in it, and they were asking our own Seamus Gunn what the legal implications of that were. It wasn't me. Now, we put this up on our social media and it kind of really took off, and many people aren't happy with this practice. I think you're amongst them, Paddy. Good morning to you. Thanks for your time.
How's it going, Greg? I'm not against it in one way, but at the same time, you know, you don't want, if you're out socialising or having a bit of crack, you don't want to be seeing it the following day if you're making a fool of yourself.
Let's just get the, just let's say the quiet part out loud right from the beginning, right? Right.
But, no, that's the, I mean, there's a bit of crack in a lot of cases, but I mean, sometimes you just don't want to see it, but see it the next day and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
My biggest annoyance is what I put up on the social media was when people come aboard the boat, the first thing they do is they have the camera out in your face.
Mm.
They're filming you from the minute you leave the pier, from the minute they enter the boat. And I mean, it's not, I'm not sounding like the Grinch, but at the same time, it's a wee bit unnerving. You're always on edge, wondering what you're going to mistake you're going to make next or something, you know. So I mean, it's too much of a thing. I feel like I'm an exhibit.
Mm.
You know, I mean,
as nice as the cliffs are and everything else that you show people, you're part of the product, aren't you? And I think there's this expectation.
Well, unfortunately, that's part of it, surely. Yeah. And I mean, I don't, as I say, I don't mind. I don't want to be like a pure grump about it, but at the same time, you know, give me a bit of peace. Like, you know, I mean, just take a few shots, surely, by all means. There's a wee bit of speaking that I do, and I don't mind that. But these things are stuck in my face. I mean, I was standing one day steering the boat, and this lad was standing behind, you know, is it? And so I turned around, the camera was about maybe a foot away from the back of my head. I mean, what the hell is that about? You know, it's one thing to be taking a few photographs and having a bit of fun, but the one's intense, like they're doing a documentary when they get aboard the boat, you know.
Yeah, there's no escaping it. But that being said, I think there's one thing if we're out and about, say me and you headed into Donegal Town for a few pints and a dance, right? But I think you need to flip this, Paddy, because every one of those social media shots that are on your boat, on your trips, that's free advertising for you. Providing you don't make a hens of it.
I know that part of it too, and I do appreciate that part of it. Now, Jesus, don't get me wrong, I do appreciate everybody comes out with me. But there's some of us just a wee bit too intense. You know, some of us just know. You know, I think it's unmannerly, to be perfectly honest, and to have a camera in your face. If they would even ask, you know, Paddy, we're going to take a few photos, or can we take a wee video? You know, that's one thing. You could be on the phone to somebody talking about something completely different, and there's somebody videoing you in the background.
Yeah.
You know, that's the annoying one, you know.
All right, I mean, interesting stuff.
You say, we're on the public eye, it's great to see everybody coming out with us, but at this point, it could be a wee bit of slack, you know.
It's just a bit too much. All right, Paddy, listen, well said. Thanks very much indeed. Any views on that? 086 60 25,000. A caller says, I do agree there should be no cameras allowed and no photos on Facebook. I actually stopped going to functions for this reason. See, this is a thing. Like, I genuinely didn't think this was a big deal until you start seeing people's comments and you start seeing changes that they've made to their socialising, etc. A caller says also it doesn't help in terms of security with some individuals knowing people are out and a home is empty. Or are we all overreacting? Let me know. In my local pub, there's one guy and his wife works in the pub. He sits on his own watching the cameras. He doesn't work there, but has access to the cameras, and then he records whatever he wants and sends it to others. He posted a video of someone playing pool and said, God, this must be rubbish pool. Surely this is illegal. No wonder people don't go to the pubs anymore. Well, I don't know about that. I just don't think that's actually very good business, to be honest with you. And it's a completely almost... It's almost completely a separate issue altogether. On the closure of Eurogiant, Greg, your expert you had there on Friday referenced Brexit as a reason for Eurogiant's closure. The UK did not charge more to Irish customers. It was our own revenue commissioners who started forcing Irish companies and individuals to pay extortionate fees on UK goods. You should explain this fact to your listeners who seem to be of the opinion that the UK is charging more to the Irish. I didn't get that impression at all. I think really it was post-Brexit is the you know, they obviously had issues with supply chain links to China around the time of COVID, and then Brexit was another problem. Whether it was the British or the Irish that were at fault, I don't think really he was attributing any blame. It just became more complicated to do business there. Just wondering if the original planned airport at the Big Isle in Manorcunningham had went ahead without public interference, political interference, would there be empty planes flying to Dublin today, considering its proximity to Letterkenny, Inishowen and the Finn Valley? I think the wrong choice was made back in the day. It doesn't always have to be either or, but it is kind of a... It would be a fascinating experiment to see how an airport closer to Letterkenny would fare. Obviously... You know, the West of the Gantry deserves to be served as well. Everything doesn't have to go into Letterkenny. And I think sometimes when there is major developments outside of Letterkenny, some people within it sort of go, well, you know, like the bridge, for an example, the airport. But other areas deserve their development and their investment as well. It can make a big difference to other people's lives. Greg, while driving home recently, the car in front of me hit a cat. It was lying on the road, struggling to move, which is very distressing even to read. It was clearly very seriously injured, but the driver drove on. The attitude really disturbed me. The cat was someone's pet. Made me wonder, would they have treated a person in the same way? Thankfully, I've never been in contact with an animal on the road, so I've never really considered what you might do in that situation. Is it the norm to... What do you do? I suppose you stop and take it to a vet, but obviously sometimes, given the size of the animal versus the size of the vehicle, the injuries could be really quite devastating and not necessarily something everyone would have the stomach for. I don't know what the norm is. As I say, it's just something I've never had experience of, which is good. I'm lucky in that regard. Okay, I'm joined in studio by the Donegal Person of the Year 2025, Mr. Paddy Keeney. Paddy, congratulations.
Thank you very much, Greg.
You didn't see this coming at all. This come just completely out of the blue.
Yeah, I was really fooled, you know, and I thought maybe there would be someone if you were ever in that situation. But when the chairperson, Siobhan Shovlin, rang me, I thought she was looking, as I did help him in years past, maybe with old pictures and bits of video and stuff like that. And she said, I suppose it's that time of year again. You know, and sure, I would always like to help him out. But then she said, it's you.
Oh, wow, brilliant.
So I couldn't get my head around that fact.
Are you comfortable with something like that?
Well, I never aspire, to be honest,
for
that sort of thing.
Not everyone likes the spotlight, but this spotlight shone directly on you.
I have had such great respect for the Donegal Person of the Year, right, since Father McDair was then given the honour. And so something, you know, I respect gratefully, so I do particularly honour it, Greg, you know.
You're among some amazing people and very fitting, and you fit right in there. Because obviously, you know, in life we have all different ways of influencing and its significance, and yours was is very significant in that, you know, one of the big feathers in your cap is a co-founder of Highland Radio. Right, so where were we at that point? Obviously, there was a network of pirate radio stations, right?
Yes.
What was your role in that?
Well, we never got, I never anyhow got involved in
pirates
stations. So it's just we had the late Kevin McIntyre, Captain Kevin McIntyre, who both of us worked together, and we've been talking about projects in Donegal and futuristic sort of stuff, and Kevin was a great man for that. But then we thought, you know, there is pirate stations and all this sort of thing, but there's nothing organised about all this. You know, we need a licence. You can't go in. I mean, I worked in the Department of Post and Telegraph, so I was well aware that you needed a licence to broadcast. So we made an application through Raymond O'Neill, who later joined the committee, the Solicitor General, God rest him, just died. And the Porrig Faulkner was the Minister for Post and Telegraph, so he wrote back to say, well, there's no legislation to enact a radio licence for broadcasting in Ireland except for the national channels. So that was the start of it all. So the next step then was to form this committee from Father McDyer down. We had two, funny enough, I mentioned it the last night at the lunch, that we had Father McDyer and the late Dermot Walsh from Carrigart. They were two Donegal Persons of the Year, first and third.
There you go.
And we invited them then on to that committee, and they played a big part.
The structure of the committee, the board, the committee, the makeup of that, was that by design? So, in other words, what was the thinking at the time? Was that a diktat in terms of the licence application, or is that the vision that you and others had?
We had a vision of involving the whole county.
Yeah.
And, of course, when we didn't get the south of the county, that was a disappointment.
It really still remains a great
because
disappointment.
Because we had Jim White down there. He was on our committee to cover that South Donegal scene. We had Father McDyer over in Glenfalmkill. Dermot Wells then was kind of north-west. Brendan Keaveney was on his own. Some people that might have been a bit close to political, but not in political. Paddy McGowan
politics
helped us
adjacent.
Out in the early day. Yeah, that's right. So, because at that time, like, a politician couldn't have joined local radio boards, you know, so...
What logic... Well, I've heard the logic, but for listeners' benefit, like, this split we have in the county, it kind of is historic. If you look at the papers, you know, the Democrat down south, the People's Press up north. I'm not saying it's religiously like that, but it kind of felt like that there. I just wish we were a one county radio station. No disrespect to Northwest, who I worked for in the day, an ocean that's there now. But this idea that this county's in two.
Well, I thought I was particularly disappointed, and I'll tell you why, Greg. And it's a funny sort of a story, but it's true. There were six of my family abroad, and I used to send them the local papers every week if I could. But when you had five newspapers then, which newspaper do I send? You know? And this threw an idea into my head. Wouldn't it be lovely just to have one newspaper that would cover the whole county? But the radio then, I says, well, look,
that'll
sort that out, you know. Yes. So when the license came along and we were missing, the best I could find out about that, it was political, that decision. And it was simply this, that you do need a certain population to run a radio station so as you'll be able to reap advertisements and all that sort of thing. And they wanted, of course, to place a station in Sligo, and they didn't have the numbers.
Critical mass,
they didn't have the numbers, so they've done now, like they've done with South Donegal in politics, they've taken a bit away.
But
give it
like, I mean, as I say, I worked for Northwest at the time, and I'll talk of Northwest.
Yeah.
It doesn't work because you have Sligo City, Ballyshannon, Donegal Town, Killybegs, you know, all different priorities, different people. And what would end up happening is you go, yes, well, you know, things are bad in Sligo. Oh, and South Donegal as well. Yeah. And we had this opt-out 105 FM, right? And we would contribute news then up to the main news desk. And it always felt like a struggle to get the prominence.
Yeah.
It always felt like South Donegal was a little bit of the poor cousin.
That's
if you know
right.
what I mean.
That's
and
right, yeah.
that's, I'm not sure what that is like now, but it certainly... Well, it just never made sense, even working within the ecosystem, you know.
Well, that's right, and that's the feedback we would have got here from that from the south of the county, the people there. They wanted Highland Radio to cover them, the whole county, but technically it was easy done, but from the best authorities in the Department of Communications.
Well, now we have a situation whereby, you know, a lot of, you know, we would get 3 or 4 million polls every single month on smart speakers and the apps. So people choose.
Oh, that's a great.
Yeah.
So that's a great addition.
We're not as reliant on the network.
That's
but
right.
the network, Paddy, what a job to take on to try and get a transmission network in this part of the world and to cover all the pockets as best as you could.
That's right.
I don't think there would. There's not another radio station in the country since that has had to face that challenge. So how you were responsible for designing this, right?
Yeah.
And then finding locations and getting masts up. Yeah. How big a job was that?
It was. I must have climbed every hill nearly in Donegal at the time. I suppose the experience I had working with the Department Post and Telegraphs, and there was communications a lot there, and there were some radio communications as well. So I had an idea what happened, what would work. So we had to put a transmitter in the west of the county. It was supposed to go at Crowy Head, for example. Mm-hmm. But there was no access to Crowy Head, even though it was a great site. But that's the Department of Communication picks these sites, and then you're supposed to operate there. But my experience of working on Arranmore Island and telecommunications and repairs out there, I knew the vision from the top of Arranmore there, and we could link it from Scalp Mountain, get it across and rebroadcast it. That would save a lot of problems. So lucky for us, and Fala Gowan and Aaron Moore and Mrs. Galler, I bought the site of her out there.
And so how many transmission sites did we have at launch?
Well, we just had the two.
Okay.
And then we had to fill in the Finn Valley and Anishone and Moville and Easter.
And of course, it's a balancing act. And have a slug there. Mm. There's a balancing act too, because there is... you are told at what power you can broadcast as well. So you're trying to get this signal into every nook and cranny. And, you know, you could probably crank it up and give everyone glorious FM, right? But at the same time, there's rules and regs in relation to that. You don't want to be leaking into somebody else's franchise area. Yeah. You know, there's...
It's a whole European thing, you're right, Greg, because you have to be careful with the British authorities. You can't encroach on their thing, and they're Northern Ireland, so there's frequencies allotted now, 103.3 at the other end of the six counties.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens there is that's designed so that when the 103 comes on there, it blots out the one coming from
there
here.
Is some,
there's a plan all in there, you know, and so that makes it difficult for...
I must say, actually, there's an extended rollout of DAB radio. I thought that was a dead technology, but there seemed to be. But you listeners, you will be surprised to learn that DAB will be available everywhere except Donegal as part of this new trial. So that's where we're at still. But thanks to Paddy, we have the network here to keep us going on FM. When Highland then launched, were you... Did you expect it to be as popular as it was? You know, I mean, obviously there'd be an initial excitement, right? But you also have to have something that connects with people.
Yeah. Well, we did do a good bit of research because obviously we wanted to know for a start off, could we make enough money in advertisement to run the show?
They're still on about that.
that'll never stop. But I suppose NWCR in Buncrana and DCR in Letterkenny, they were good examples of popularity in pirate. And so they were the only pointers we really had. And as it transpired, we ended up taking half the staff out of both of them, as presenters.
Well, the expertise was there, wasn't it?
That was there, and as well as that, they had another certain thing. They were people who loved radio.
Yeah. And down the south, he could have tapped into the likes of KTOK, which was broadcasting in FM when 2FM wasn't, which was really quite remarkable, and Glencoe Radio and some of the great characters from there. But they ended up sort of being more subsumed into Northwest Radio back in the day as well. So there certainly was quite a lot of talent from the Pirates, in inverted commas, that ended up. So, I mean, obviously you're a member of the Ballycorns band. Right, so what was your role within that band?
We were just a wedding and
don't put that on your poster. We're just a wedding band.
That was the Barleycorns you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, sorry.
We were just a three-piece that started up and we did, famously, we did the Candlelight Dinner in the Central Hotel in Donegal Town, which was a big gig, you know, and Mrs. Highland took a liking to us, so we loved that, of course. But then it spread out to, there was a big dinner dance thing happening in those days, Greg, you know. Every company had a dinner dance and that was a big deal. And then, of course, the weddings and the pubs, singing lounges were starting to come on. And
there was plenty of gigs.
We just kind of grew into, I remember us playing 14 nights in a row before we finished up when I got married in 1972. So we were very... we were very busy, and we weren't that great, but we were popular.
Yeah, and that talks to your love of music, and that's why I wanted to reference that too, because obviously, you know, you then went on to become a presenter at Highland Radio. Were you a presenter from launch, Paddy?
No, I wasn't, because I was so busy technically.
Yeah.
You know, we were all the time, like, sorting out little problems and trying to improve this and that, and I wanted to concentrate on that. It was probably, we were probably a year or so in before we got into broadcasting. And then
you loved that, did you?
I was interested in the marching bands at the time because my own family were involved, and we had a very good band in Murlock and Lifford, St Patrick's. And there's a big band scene in the county. We had about 20 bands and there was competitions every Sunday. And, you know, when you looked at it, there was as many people playing music in bands as there were out playing football, GAA or soccer. And I said, you know, we can't ignore this. So I went, I organised this little programme called Band Corner.
Right.
So I'd take in the committees and talk about it, then we'd play some recordings I would do of them. And so that started me off
That's an example that, you know, I wouldn't call it niche programming, but specific programming that the platform was there for then.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
Can you imagine trying? I mean, you might get on Nationwide if you kept at it once in 10 years, but, you know, there was that platform for you to celebrate.
That's right. So that was very successful at the time. And then I used to do a lot of video, of course, as well of them. But, it was then, I remember, that's the time, do you remember that we had edited the programmes on tape, splicing the tape
started on minidisc.
Yeah, did you?
I think Donalyn there still has the scars. I think Donalyn there still has the scars to attest to, but also to carts, like, so each ad would have been on a cart, presumably at launch
that's
here
right.
as well.
That's right. Well, we were, I think, the first to move over to computer editing.
Right.
You know, so we did away with the splicing as early as we could.
That machine was in the newsroom when I came here. It wasn't used, but the actual machine for
editing.
Yeah, there you go. So, in terms of innovation, right, I think, you know, given your career before you went on to establish Highland Radio, were you always interested in technological advancements, wires, cables, plugging stuff in?
Kind
of what I am, to be honest. I'm obsessed with this stuff. And it never leaves you, like.
Oh, yes. Well, you see, my work, I was trained as a technician as well, and we had done the electronics, the electricity, the physics and the math and all the rest of it. And so we spent half the year training in Dublin and the only half the year then out in the field. And so half of that year in Dublin was at Dublin Castle in the telecommunications school. And then the other one was in Kevin Street College, where we did the theory, the electronics, electricity and all. So I'd got a decent enough background in, and the whole technology thing. And I was interested in it. And the wires follows on from there, Greg. So I felt very much at home in that field, you know. But then I became a radio ham. So I still hold a radio ham license. So that was the radio side. Then I had a study for that and learn your Morse code at that time. I don't remember any of it now, of course. But then that led on then to having enough theory for putting local radio on the air.
Amazing.
And, so,
but still a lot. I mean, there's an awful lot involved in that you'd have to learn on the job and sort out as you were going, because to some extent you're pushing the boundaries, you know, of what you can do, what the equipment is designed to do, and so on and so forth.
That's right. There was opportunities as well when RTE were down here doing local elections or general elections, and you know, like me, would have been on standby, and making sure that the lines were working. As well as that, there would be church broadcasts. I seemed to get a lot of that work. And so I was learning all the time, and if I ever got an opportunity and to go into RT in Dublin to the GPO or whatever you could learn, I enjoyed it. And then, of course, the whole idea of radio then, as it came to us, and was on from there.
All right, brilliant stuff. We're in the company of the Donegal Person of the Year 2025, Paddy Keeney. Kevin McFeely says, Paddy was my boss, and all I can say is thank you. You are a gentleman. And he's worked together in P&T there, I believe.
Indeed, yeah.
I would like to congratulate Paddy on being awarded Donegal Person of the Year. A worthy recipient and a gentleman. Him and his late wife were great friends of ours, Nora O'D from Rafo. A former member of the Letterkenny reunion wants to say thank you to Paddy for all his work. Thanks for all the lovely memories and videos he made of our events. He was such an asset to us, and we went on so many different trips together to London, etc. Obviously, between the radio and your video work, there's archive there. Is that something that you're passionate about, or you feel that's important, or just was things that you were interested in?
Well, I did start out mostly. Well, I've always done a bit of movie and that, going back to 69. But then I got interested then in video, and I felt that the Donegal GA had very little in the archives, and I suggested at the time that we get video equipment, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
And so I then operated the video equipment, covering matches and club matches, county finals and all that sort of thing, for probably up to about 15 years after we started. And I have an archive there at the moment on my YouTube channel at Paddy Keeney. And there's over 200 videos in there, and there's a lot of football in there, and there's a lot of marching bands. There's a lot of other events like Fly Kills and stuff like that. And
I think it's just a remarkable contribution to history. Because we now say we're doing a history. Say we've got Dr. Joe Kelly on here and we're talking history, and he's referencing
a spot now.
Yeah, he's referencing a book, or he's referencing, you know, there will come a time where we're talking, it won't be me, but people will be reflecting on things in the future, and it'll be your archive, which I think is just a wonderful gift.
Well, you know, I get feedback from it, Greg, and there's some lovely feedback. One recent was a woman who contacted me to say she had seen her father for the first time. She was 2 years of age when he died. He was a musician as well, and a very good singer from Derry, actually. And so she was thrilled just to see that and see him performing, you know. And I believe all that stuff should be left there, and when I'm gone, children, grandchildren, and will be able to refer back to it, you know. And
throw your headphones on there for me, Paddy. I think they should be to your left. Hopefully the volume is okay. Wouldn't be the first set of headphones you had on in this studio. Because, of course, Paddy was chair of the Finn Valley Male Choir. He helped establish it, and a vital social and mental health support network for older men. Gerard joins us. Hi, Gerard.
Hi, Greg. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Now, Paddy's on the call with us as well. You're reflecting on the Finn Valley Men's Choir.
Hello, Jared.
Yeah, when we were absolutely... Hi, Paddy. How you doing? We're absolutely delighted on behalf of the Men's Choir to extend our many congratulations to Paddy. He's such a real gentleman, the word go. And he's actually the second man in the choir now, Fergus Cleary being the first to receive such an accolade.
Sweet. And of course we better send good wishes to Fergus, Jared.
Yeah, Fergus is in hospital at the moment. So, you know, we're thinking about him and hope he recovers soon.
Yes.
It was very important, Jared, the choir, wasn't it? Obviously for people to get together, to enjoy and celebrate music, but also an opportunity for... I think, you know, sometimes rare opportunities for men to get together and socialise in a non-alcoholic environment and tease things out and what have you.
Yeah. Very important for mental health. Mm. We have over 30 men in the choir at the minute, and they're really all enjoying it. And it's great for their stimulation, their development, their mental health. That social interaction is vital to their well-being at the minute, you know. And Paddy is also our chairperson for the choir as well. So, yeah, it's all good.
Brilliant stuff. Lovely stuff, Jared. Thank you.
Jared, we better mention our musical director, Mary Dunn, the part she's playing in it.
We all love Mary,
you know.
Mary Dunn is our musical director. Mary's from Letterkenny. She's absolutely fantastic.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks, Jared. Can I congratulate Paddy on his award from Rita McLaughlin? Another a true gentleman from Kathleen Boner, also involved in the men's choir, was so excited.
One of the one of the founders of the Finn Valley Men's Choir, Kathleen Boner, herself and Catherine Given, Alice Gilday, and those.
Yeah.
So
you talked out for our draw. Played GA with our draw.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Meantin na Gaé in Ardra, and we had a schools team even before we left there. Ardra were instrumental in the underage, under 16s, the 14s down, and bringing that to county level. God rest my brother, oldest brother John was involved in that. We had a parish league in Ardra when I was a kid, and that was such a success that they went a motion forward to the county board to introduce underage football in the county, and that's what happened.
Well, so Ardra with the Trailblazers then?
And that team went on then to win the juvenile, the under-14, they had juvenile, and they had under-18, and then they went on to the juniors, won a couple of county championships with junior and leagues as well. So all started with underage football, so that's the way forward.
What's your medals cabinet like?
Well, I never... never kept a very fancy one.
But you played seniors, though.
I did, yeah. Well, I got a run out for the county under 21s against Derry,
and
we lost in the first round in Valvavay. Brian McGinniff then came to me once. In fact, it was the opening of the Oman GA pitch, and very kindly offered me a game. And then I was playing a 7-a-side final in Lifford, so I had opt for the final. That's one of the best.
But you are passionate about the GAA, are you? I mean, obviously, with your involvement with Ardra, you've already talked of seeing the importance of archiving and being an official videographer, right? So is the GAA an institution that's very close to your heart?
Oh, it would be, yeah. It would be my first sport, there's no doubt about it. I have absolutely nothing. I mean, I've played soccer. I've never been able to play rugby, although I have a couple of grandsons that really enjoy the game. But again, differently, they play Gaelic and they also play soccer. So I love to see them playing all the different games, Greg, you know. But we grew up, I think it's what you grew up with, and I grew up with the Gaelic football and listening to all the great stories. And Ardra had a very successful club in the early days, you know, and that tradition is a... hardest thing today.
Yeah, well, that's good.
And
yeah.
That's where it comes from. You know?
Big congratulations to Paddy Keeney. Mm. Well deserved. You're a star from the Convoy Women up Donegal. I don't know what the collective is there, Paddy.
Well, Probably we really need P.O. McCann here. They always had a good line for P.O. when we were playing Tyrone, you know, and they were the best at the one-liners. They're three great.
Congratulations people. To Packy, a great honour for a great gentleman from Tony McNamee. Congratulations, Packy, from Leslie and Margaret Long. Best wishes and congratulations to Packy. I worked with him in Aircom, and he was always a gentleman and so kind to everyone, from Leo McGranahan. And also, too, which I wasn't aware, it's great to have an opportunity to ask you about it, is your involvement in charitable housing associations. Has that been throughout? Was that a period in your life? When was that?
Yeah, well, for the last 17 years.
Yeah.
I'm at an age now, I was saying to the committee, I've been chairman for the last few years there, and saying that if I stay any longer, I'll be coming in as a client.
Hey, no harm in that. At least you'll know the way in.
So it is time to hand over. But just going back to Leslie Long there.
Okay, sorry.
It's just the fact that Leslie's father, Willie Long, the late Willie Long from Dunkaneely, was an amazing technical wizard himself.
Right.
Yeah. And in the early days of our Barleycorns, where I played with Peter Oliver McNeil, my cousin from Ardra, still playing music, and the late wonderful musician Dom Esby from Balbuffet, and I'd like to say hello to his wife Mary and the family. And then we had Frank McGee from Ardra, who was a teacher in the comprehensive in Glenties. Frank spent the time with us, went off and got his heat step, whatever it was at the time, to do teaching. But they were... Willie was an inspiration technically as well, because he was a radio ham, and I think that's where I got the love of the radio ham.
Right, okay.
You know, when you... Those days, and when it was £3 a minute to ring New York, and Willie Long could go in on the thing and talk to his friends for free.
Into New York.
And in New York. And
was that point to point?
Point to point, yeah, house to house, yeah, over the airwaves.
Unbelievable.
And it was, yeah, it was exciting. I found it very exciting.
I remember a neighbour's, this is going back 40-odd years, a neighbour, a tractor had a CB in it, and just this notion of pressing the button and maybe connecting to someone. Never really successfully did, right? But I don't even, it probably wasn't built for that.
Yeah.
But it did fascinate me as well, I have to say. Yeah. We want to add our congratulations and best wishes for the future to Packy, Frankie and Nolene Lynch in Convoy.
Yeah.
Michael and Mary Breslin in our draw, sending their congratulations to Packy, so well deserved.
It never is up there, yeah.
And a word that's come in dozens of messages, gentlemen, Packy. Is there a philosophy there? You know, manners are easy carried. A lot of, like, we do lots, we don't do lots, we do these from time to time, but it's not often you get that one word that keeps coming through, right? Is that something that you've worked hard on throughout your life, to be good
to
people?
Well, I think the most important thing is respect, you know, and I think you should respect everybody and treat them the way you would like to be treated yourself. It's nearly as simple as that, Greg. And it doesn't matter whether it's the doorman or whoever it is, he has a job to do, respect him, and deal this the same way with him as you would with the top boss in the company. That was, we never worried about talking to power or that sort of thing, you know, just respect people.
I agree with you 100%. And Packy, are you looking forward to the big night in Dublin then?
Yeah, the Bonington, and I've been fortunate to be at a few of those. Jared McGee there mentioned Fergus Cleary, who's recovering in Letterkenny Hospital. That was the first. He was a neighbour of my late wife Kathleen's, whose fifth anniversary will be next week. And then we had Shea Given, of course, my nephew. He was Donegal Person of the Year. And then late Stephen McCall. That was Stephen was a great friend of mine.
Even saying that, it still doesn't ring
no,
true.
It doesn't.
Does it?
Exactly. I just can't get over that he no longer is there. And it was lovely there to have Gemma, his daughter, along for the lunch in Buncrana the last night. And I want to say good morning to Moretta, his wife, and young Stephen. The two of his family are in New York, and so that's a tremendous loss for me personally, I feel, and to the people of Ardra and to the people of this county, because he had his heart and soul in this county, and he was a very deserving Donegal Person of the Year.
100%.
Yeah.
Really, as I say, just hard to get the head around such a vibrant, big, handsome character. A caller says, Packy's the most deserving recipient in a long time. Well done from a regular radio listener. Congratulations and best wishes to Packy. Very well deserved. Delighted to hear that you've won from Patsy and Matt McGranahan. Okay,
yes,
brilliant. Listen, thanks so much, Packy, for calling up. I mean, we can only scratch the surface of what you've contributed to the media landscape, not just locally, actually, nationally. Highland Radio, quite remarkably, and this is not blowing my own trumpet because it's nothing to do with me, has the highest market share of any radio station in Europe still to this day.
That's right.
There's no one near it. And in fact, I couldn't find one when I tried to across the world with a highest market share. So that's the amount of people listen every day or every week and for how long they listen. It's a remarkable thing.
It is. And it all started in the very first year. A famous man called Packy Bradley, I met his sister Mary down in Punkrana the last night there. And his figures were enough to bring us to number one. And then we had a fella called Sean Doherty came along then. And
it's been downhill since. Packy.
There's been a big improvement since.
We will have another opportunity to dig into all that a little bit more. Thank you.
Could I thank the Donegal Association in Dublin for the lovely treatment we got in Bunkrana the last night and the way they've handled all this. And we're looking forward to seeing everybody in Dublin at the Bonnington Hotel on the 28th of March. Please God, we'll have a good night. And thanks to Mylon Greg and thanks to Highland Radio.
Packy Keeney, thank you for Highland Radio. That's where we leave it for today. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.